was requested to speak something about Lord Chaitanya. That's like speaking about the ocean. Speak something about the ocean. Because we observed our public Gaur Purnima festival yesterday. Nice function, huh? Very nice. A lot of people. How many plates of prasadam were served? Who was counting? Many. 300. 350. Do I hear four? Going once. Do I hear four? Do I hear four? Okay. And they were happy people. Nice function. Maybe they understood something more about Lord Chaitanya afterwards. Maybe not. They had a nice function. Shastivar's Kirtan is another world. So, there's so many nice things to say about Lord Chaitanya, but I was thinking that it might be nice to explain how the Leela, because it's Leela only, how Lord Chaitanya became a devotee. So that we might become devotees too, following Lord Chaitanya. We know that Sri Krishna Chaitanya, we mentioned this yesterday, the name that was given to Lord Chaitanya upon his sannyas initiation was Krishna Chaitanya. Because he's Krishna. The name wasn't given purposely by Keshava Bharati that everyone should now know that he is Krishna. But Krishna, known by the name Chaitanya. Chaitanya is a brahmachari name. And it was quite unusual that a sannyasi is given a brahmachari name. Sannyasi is generally given a sannyasi name, but Keshava Bharati gave him a brahmachari name. Chaitanya, Krishna Chaitanya. So he's Krishna. Krishna himself. And he's in the role of a devotee of Krishna. But before he adopted the role of a devotee of Krishna, he was performing his leela as not a devotee of Krishna. Now, how does God play the role of not a devotee of himself? That's very complex. The forms of the Lord in general, they appear in either a Brahman or Kshatriya family. Now Krishna uniquely appeared in a Vaishya family. But he was born as the son of Vasudeva and Devaki. According to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, when Mother Yashoda gave birth, she didn't just give birth to a female child, but she gave birth to twins. And the first of the twins was Krishna. And the second was Yashoda, was Yogamaya. And while Yashoda was still asleep, having given birth, she was fast asleep, that's when Vasudev came and exchanged the male child for the female child. And our acharyas describe, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes, that as he was bringing Vasudev Krishna by the side of Mother Yashoda, the Swayam Bhagavan Krishna received the Vasudev Krishna, and Vasudev Krishna entered within the body of Swayam Bhagavan Krishna. Because Swayam Bhagavan Krishna, Krishna is avatari, which means he's the source of all avatars. And whatever expansions, just like from a candle you can light so many candles, and each of those candles have the same illumination power as the original candle, but one of them is the original candle. And Swayam Bhagavan Krishna is the original source of all expansions, whether they're expansions of himself, or expansions of his energies, or expansions of his parts and parcels. Krishna is the original source. And Lord Chaitanya is that same Krishna. But uniquely, he appeared in a Brahmana family, but he appeared in a Brahmin family where the Leela is very wonderful, of course. But just as Devaki had lost 6 sons by being killed by Kamsa, so similarly, Mother Sachi, she lost 8 children who died shortly after their birth. Imagine mothers if that happened. Devastating. 8 children. And one son was born named Vishvarup. Vishvarup is also an expansion of Balaram, partial expansion of Balaram. So when Vishvarup was growing up, Vishvarup went every day to go hear Srimad Bhagavatam from Advaita Acharya. I mean, imagine what that was like, going to hear Advaita Acharya's Mahavishnu's Bhagavatam class. And he was so absorbed in hearing Srimad Bhagavatam from Advaita Acharya that he would stay the whole day long. Mother Sachi would have to send messages, please come and have your lunch. He would forget to eat lunch. Mothers that know how hungry children get when it's lunchtime. He would forget to eat lunch. So Sachi had to bring him back, come and have his lunch, and he would do his midday duties, brahminical duties, take his bath, chant his Gayatri, take lunch and go back and complete the class with Advaita Acharya. He became so absorbed in his spiritual practices that Jagannath Mishra and Mother Sachi started getting worried. Uh-oh. He may not, you know what, get married. So we better hurry up and marry this young man. And when he heard the topic of marriage in the house, he took sannyas. So after Vishvarup took sannyas, Jagannath Mishra said, that's it. No school for you, Nimai. Don't study books. A brahmana telling his son, don't study books. Can you imagine, kids? You know, like, don't go to school. Don't do your homework. Don't study. Just play all day long. Whatever you want to do all day long, but no studying of books. That's what Jagannath Mishra said. So there's chapters of the mischief that Nimai, you know, the idle mind is the devil's workshop. your kids during summer vacation, what do you do with them all summer long? I mean, you know, some things, but all summer long. Let's get back to school. So, mischief, and that's a whole other leela. So finally, Jagannath Mishra and Mother Sachi resigned themselves to the fact he's got to go to school. So they enrolled him in the classroom of Gangadas Pandit, one of the most qualified teachers in all of Navadvip. And Nimai, because he's the personality of Godhead, it's like Krishna. How long did Krishna stay in the school of Sandipani Muni? According to Srimad Bhagavatam, it was 64 days. Because in 64 days, he learned everything that Sandipani Muni had to teach. So, Nimai learned everything so quickly that Gangadas Pandit ran out of things to teach him and said, okay, you can be a teacher of the things that I've taught you. And because he was so good of a teacher, all the kids wanted to be in his class. What to speak of the parents? All the parents wanted Nimai Pandit to be their son's teacher, not only in Navadvip. From all the surrounding villages, people started moving to Navadvip to enroll their son in that school, Nimai Pandit's super school. Because they not only learned their subjects so well, but so quickly. And then they're ready for, you know, accelerated math. You know how it goes, kids, right? Accelerated English and special science. And so, he was a very, very, very scholarly personality. He's the Supreme Personality, exhibiting scholarship. But he was, the Chaitanya Bhagavat describes that different persons saw Nimai Pandit in different ways. The other scholars, they saw him as Yamaraj, because he was always debate and challenge and challenge. And they saw him coming and they ran the other way, or the other side of the street, or somehow like pretend he wasn't there. And he would stand right in front of them and challenge them and debate. And the teachers saw him as Brihaspati. And the devotees were holding their heads, thinking, oh, this Nimai Pandit, if somehow or another he could become a devotee, wow, Vaishnavism would really take off if he became a devotee. But now, we can't stand to be around him. Like, specifically, Gadadhar Pandit. Because Gadadhar Pandit, who is Gadadhar Pandit in Krishna Leela? Radharani. So Radharani is naturally attracted to Krishna. And Gadadhar Pandit was naturally attracted to Nimai Pandit. But there was a problem. He was performing pastimes not like a devotee, so he would never talk about Krishna. So Gadadhar Pandit had this unstoppable attraction for Lord Chaitanya, but he couldn't stand to be around him because he would never talk about Krishna. So it was attraction, repulsion. It was driving him mad. Lord Chaitanya, at the same time, he had a distant, he would show signs of who he really was. There was another devotee a peer of the same age of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, whose name was Mukunda. Mukunda was a great singer, and sometimes in the assembly, in the gatherings at Advaita Acharya's home, Mukunda would sing. He would sing kirtan, and sometimes he would sing verses from the Bhagavatam. And the devotees were so pleased to hear Mukunda singing. The Lord Chaitanya had some special affinity for Mukunda. And so he would regularly go and challenge Mukunda in debate. That was how he was showing his affinity. The Leela, I'll give an example, but the Leela was to show two things, and most important things. One is that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was not weak in his faculty of discernment. He was a super logician. He wasn't a weak-minded sentimentalist. He would debate with anybody, other children. The Gangadas Pandit would send him to go debate with the other teachers' students, and the other teachers' students would run. And so then he would go and challenge the teacher, and he'd defeat the teacher in debate. Nimai Pandit. So he was not weak in his scholarship, showing that later, when he became a devotee, it wasn't because he just couldn't cut the mustard. He was like too, you know, weak-minded, sentimental personality, so he became a devotee. As some impersonalists like to think of, devotion is for weak-minded people. Not so. Not at all. Certainly not Nimai Pandit. But another, second reason, was that he was demonstrating that by process of gyan and by nyaya, by processes of argumentation by logic, never is there anything conclusive. Never. And he would demonstrate it. He would challenge Mukunda. My dear friend Mukunda. What is it, Nimai? I have a premise that I would like to present to you and see if you can defeat it. And Nimai would present his premise. And Mukunda would say, I can't defeat your premise, it's perfectly true. And then Nimai would defeat the premise and establish a second premise and say, now you defeat the second premise. I can't defeat that second premise because it's true. And then he would defeat the second premise and reestablish the first premise, which he had previously defeated, and establish the first premise again. Now you see if you can defeat this first premise. Oh, I can't defeat that. So then he would defeat the first premise and establish a third one, and go on and on and on. One time Srivas, he was doing the same thing with Srivas Pandit, and Srivas Pandit said, Nimai, why are you wasting your time? Such strong intelligence you have, you should understand the futility of this process of making an argument, refuting it, establishing another argument, refuting it, establishing another argument, refuting that one, and establishing it. It's endless. Why are you wasting your time? If you used one fraction of that capacity in devotion to the Supreme Lord, may you one day become such a devotee. And Nimai smiled and folded his hands and said, by your blessings, it will come to pass. One day, I may become such a devotee. He saw Mukunda coming towards him and then crossed the street. He just didn't want to have a useless debate with Nimai. So Nimai said to his associate Govinda, you see that Mukunda, he's avoiding me because he doesn't want to hear something non-Krishna. And he knows I'll only speak something non-Krishna, so he's avoiding me. But I will show you, one day, I'll become such a devotee that at my doorstep, the great demigods, Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma, they'll come and bow their heads at my doorstep and worship me. Speaking proudly, like, you know, a boastful, empirical speculator might speak about himself. So Govinda didn't take it seriously. In the course of the narration of Chaitanya Bhagavat, again and again and again, Vrindavan Das Thakur would speak about the extreme degree of materialism, the influence of Kali that had entered into the Brahminical community of Navadvipa. And since the Brahminical community, all the other communities, because the Brahmanas are giving direction to the rest of society. So at length he would describe how the Brahminical community became so absorbed in materialism, the use of spiritual practices and their intellectual capacity to develop their wealth or get their children married in a grand way and spend gobs of money and anything to do but devotion to God. And so on. So, lamenting that situation, Advaitacharya said, I will personally invite the personality of Godhead to come. I will invoke his presence. That day will come, you will see. And everyone felt relieved hearing the words of Advaitacharya. Meanwhile, so this is just setting the scene. Meanwhile, Ishwara Puri, who was a disciple of Madhavendra Puri, and in the line of Madhvacharya, Ishwara Puri was a sannyasi who was traveling from holy place to holy place and spending some time at those holy places, associating with the Vaishnavas in those holy places and then going to another holy place. But he was, although he was in the renounced order, he was a sannyasi, he didn't dress as a sannyasi because he didn't want to draw attention to himself. He dressed in renounced cloth but not carrying the marks of a sannyasi, just so he could be obscure and unnoticed and not ostentatious, just quietly moving about. So he, when he came to Navadvipa, first he went to Shantipur. Shantipur is the place where Advaitacharya resided. And Advaitacharya is Mahavishnu. So in the presence of Ishwara Puri, immediately he could sense this person is a very elevated soul. In that gathering, Mukunda began to sing some glorifications of Krishna. And as he was singing glorifications of Krishna, Ishwara Puri uncontrollably became spiritually moved. And symptoms of ecstatic devotion began to appear. And at once Advaitacharya declared, "Aha! Just see! This is not an ordinary person at all. This is a great personality. I fall at his feet." They spent some time discussing with one another, and at once Advaitacharya said, "I can understand you have some connection with Madhavendra Puri. Because who else could have this symptom of ecstatic love just hearing about Krishna unless you've had some association with Madhavendra Puri? Have you?" He said, "Yes, I'm his disciple." Advaitacharya was also a disciple of Madhavendra Puri. So immediately they embraced and were so happy discussing Krishna Katha together. For days at Shantipur, they associated with one another, just sharing Krishna Katha day and night, experiencing greater and greater ecstasies of love of God. After some time, Gadadhar Pandit came to know of Ishwara Puri's presence at Advaitacharya's home in Shantipur. So Gadadhar Pandit, like iron filings in a magnet, he was attracted. He went there and sat at Ishwara Puri's feet and heard, because Ishwara Puri had been writing a book about Krishna's pastimes. Something like Krishna Lilamrita, something like that is the title. So he would go and sit at his feet and hear every day. After some time, Gadadhar Pandit invited Ishwara Puri to stay at his home. So Ishwara Puri accepted his invitation. So the affinity between Gadadhar Pandit and Ishwara Puri was just sublime. In the course of spending time in Navadvip, Ishwara Puri came to hear about the different personalities who resided in Navadvip. He heard about Jagannath Mishra, and he heard about Nimai Pandit, this super scholar, and that he was engaged in, his expertise was Sanskrit grammar and logic. So we thought, I would like to meet this Nimai Pandit. Maybe he can be of some assistance in my writing. Even Prabhupada describes that every writer, you know, when you're writing some paper for school, it's always good to have somebody else read it, because when you, Prabhupada explains, when you read your own writing, you don't see the little mistakes. Someone else is reading it, they see the mistakes. I mean, not just your teacher, if somebody else sees it first, it's better. So having a proofreader is something that Prabhupada engaged his own disciples proofreading. Any writer will do that. I mean, an editor is one thing and a proofreader is another thing. So he was he wanted to engage Nimai Pandit in that way. So one day he was walking with Gadadhar Pandit by the side of the Ganga. And he saw underneath a large tree by the side of the Ganga, there was a whole group of students, and there was one teacher amongst the students. He said, "Who is that teacher?" He said, "That's Nimai Pandit." "Oh, Nimai Pandit, I've heard of him. I'd like to meet him. Can you introduce me?" So Gadadhar Pandit brought Ishwara Puri and introduced, "This is Nimai Pandit, this is Ishwara Puri." At once. So this is how did Nimai Pandit become a devotee? Association begins. Sadhu Sangha. And immediately, because he's a nicely trained young Brahmin boy, immediately he stood and he offered his respects to Ishwara Puri and said that my father, Jagannath Mishra, I am sure he would be very happy to receive you in our home. Could you come one day to our home for lunch? Some service. And so Ishwara Puri accepted. "Oh yes, I've heard Jagannath Mishra and Mother Sachi. Very nice. I would like to come to your home. I'll come on such and such day." So Lord Chaitanya received Ishwara Puri and he served him. Mother Sachi did the cooking. He did menial service, brought the dishes, served all the prasad, sat and listened. And when the prasadam was over, Ishwara Puri began reading. There was, because he had received some service, he was giving some service. There's a nice little incident in the life of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, where one king had invited, or was a wealthy landholder, I think it was a king, had invited Bhaktisiddhanta to come to spend some time with him. So he accepted the invitation. But the king had a chief minister, and the chief minister was very much afraid he might lose his good standing with the king. So he was saying bad things about Bhaktisiddhanta. "You better not let him speak because something, 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 something." So the king didn't have him speak. And when it came time for meals, Bhaktisiddhanta fasted. It went on for like 5 days. No speaking and fasting for 5 days. The king was very concerned. He said, you're fasting. Please take something. He said, how can I take something if I'm not rendering service? I've not come here as a beggar, for I'm hungry for something to eat, but I should do some service. And if I can't do some service, I shouldn't eat. And he left at the end of the fifth day, having fasted for 5 full days. Anyway, Ishwara Puri had taken his meal at Jagannath Mishra's home, and so he began reading from his nice scripture, Krishna Lilamrita. I want to read exactly what he wrote, what he said. Krishna Lilamrita, Sri Krishna Lilamrita. So, after completing his reading at their home, he said, Nimai, I have some service I'd like to request of you. Can you please, you're very expert in grammar, can you please point out when you're hearing from Krishna Lilamrita if there's any mistakes? And then I can take that into consideration and make some correction. So, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, in his commentary on this, he explains as follows. I want to read it because it's so nice. Nimai Pandit said, first of all, this book is composed by such a pure devotee as Puripada. And moreover, it is full of topics about Krishna. Therefore, whoever finds faults in this book is certainly an offender. The poetry of a pure devotee, in whatever form it may be, is always pleasing to Krishna. There is no doubt about it. The Supreme Lord never sees any grammatical faults in the statements of his devotees, for he is controlled by devotion and accepts the sentiments of his devotees. A person who finds faults in the statements of a pure devotee is himself full of faults. There is no such audacious person who is able to find faults in the descriptions of the Supreme Lord by the pure devotee, Puripada. Now this is Bhaktisiddhanta's paraphrase. He prefaces by saying these are very important and pregnant words one should understand carefully. Because he himself was a writer, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, as was Srila Prabhupada, a writer. But Prabhupada gave certain guidelines for his editors to edit, and it wasn't like change meanings. It was if there's some technical, because Prabhupada knew that scholarly people would be reading his books, and to scholarly people, technical is more important than content in many cases. You know, that it's precise, and they see a flaw in precision, the whole thing gets tossed out because it's lacking in precision. So he didn't want that. He wanted by the English language, where it was person's first language, exactly, not changing the meaning, but exactly the precise message should be presented, and that was the instruction he gave to his editors. In the Bengali text, here's what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, that there's a, in Sanskrit, if you want to say, at the time of offering obeisances to Lord Vishnu, someone who makes a mistake can say Vishnaya, which means unto Vishnu. So it's grammatically, it's a mistake. You say, Vishnave Namaha. That's correct. But both achieve equal piety by their offering of obeisances to the Supreme Lord, because Lord Sri Janardhan sees the sentiment of the living being. In other words, he accepts the quality of the devotion, or and he awards the result accordingly. Like, for example, Prabhupada did not teach us and drill us over and over again about proper pronunciation of Sanskrit. He could have. He knew how to. But he didn't make that emphasis. Because when one offers with sincere devotion unto Krishna something, he accepts the sincere devotion. Whether it's grammatically or technically, whatever. It's the sincerity of devotion more than... And conversely, one may be technically very expert, but if behind that technical there's a lack of or paucity of devotion, who can attract Krishna by that? So he went on. One who finds fault with a devotee is himself at fault, for a devotee's descriptions are meant only for the pleasure of Krishna. Therefore, who will dare find fault with your devotional descriptions of Krishna's pastimes? Hearing Nimai's reply was like a shower of nectar upon the body of Ishwara Puri. So Ishwara Puri smiled. And then he asked again. He said, Noah, I want you to do this as a service. If you don't find any technical mistakes, that's fine. But if you find some technical mistakes, I'd like you to point them out. Can you do that service? So Nimai, on the order of Ishwara Puri, accepted some service. A little service. He's a grammar teacher. So he used his grammar skill to serve Krishna. To serve Ishwara Puri. Nimai would sit every day with Ishwara Puri for 1 or 2 hours, hearing and then discussing the topics that he heard. Because naturally that happens when there's service. There's some Krishna Katha. Just like Narada in his previous life, he was doing some simple service. He was serving the prasad to the Bhakti Vedantas and little menial services, whatever he could do. But he was also hearing their topics about Krishna. And because of his eagerness to hear the topics about Krishna, they became very affectionate upon him. Little boy, eager to hear topics about Krishna. So they showed their blessings, showered their mercy upon him. And he was advancing and advancing and advancing. Same, how did Lord Chaitanya become a devotee? Through this mercy of Ishwara Puri. His initiation didn't happen till much later. But this association for, according to Chaitanya Bhagavat, for 3 months, staying at the house of Gadadhara Pandit, and every day doing a little service and hearing from him and discussing Krishna Katha. One day, where is it? Yeah. Yeah, after hearing his poetry, one day the Lord smiled and said, Datu. I don't know Sanskrit. Does anybody here know Sanskrit rules? There's the verb, there's a particular types of verbs, and there's the root meaning of how a verb is used determines, like an active or a transient verb. I think that's how we say it in English. So in Sanskrit, the verb has, one is passive, one is active. He said the verb root, or dhatu, in this sentence is incorrect. Mistake. The atma nepadi form of the verb should not be used here. After saying this, the Lord returned home. He went back from Gadadhara Pandit's home to his home. Ishwara Puri was a learned scholar in the scriptures, and he enjoyed analyzing scholastic topics. After Nimai left, Ishwarapuri considered the verb root that he had used and came to a conclusion from many different angles. He left the verb in its Atmanepadi form. And when Nimai came the next day, he explained, "I have concluded that the verb that you said yesterday should be Parasmaipadi, should remain Atmanepadi." The dhatu is correct. So the technical thing here is that one verb says something is done for oneself, or something is done upon another. So an action is done upon another. And what he meant was the former, not the latter. It's technical. Normally, Nimai Pandit would debate and debate and debate, because that's his thing. He's a debater. And he never, never loses a debate. He immediately accepted. When the Lord heard his explanation, he was most satisfied with his servant's victory. He's a small boy, but he's the personality of Godhead. And in the Leela, here comes his spiritual master. In reality, he's the supreme personality of Godhead, and here comes this pure devotee. He's happy to be defeated by a pure devotee. Or in Leela, he's accepting the authority of Ishwarapuri. And he was happy to do so. He was happy to be defeated. It's like Prabhupada describing when he met Bhaktisiddhanta. You know that story? When Prabhupada first met Bhaktisiddhanta up on the roof of one building in Calcutta, and Bhaktisiddhanta was speaking about the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, and he saw Prabhupada, "You're an educated person, you speak English, you should take the teachings of Lord Chaitanya to the English-speaking parts of the world." And Prabhupada offered a different idea, kind of like an argument, a Gandhian argument, saying, as long as India is under British subjugation, who outside of India is going to pay any attention to our message? After India gets independence, then the rest of the world may pay attention. So later was Prabhupada's reply. And for 20 minutes, Bhaktisiddhanta defeated him. And Prabhupada spoke later. He said, "From my childhood, I was always very good at debate. I would always win debates. I was never defeated. But when I was defeated by Bhaktisiddhanta, I was very happy to be defeated." Thinking, here is a qualified person. That the defeat was primarily based on the fact that spiritual activity and spiritual truth isn't dependent upon material circumstance. At any time, in any circumstance, spiritual truth is spiritual truth. And it must be spoken. And it will prevail. Light is stronger than darkness. Doesn't matter whether India is under British subjugation or free from British subjugation. The truth is to be spoken, it will always prevail. Not circumstantial dependent. Do not wait. This message should go forward. He accepted. So similarly, Lord Chaitanya accepted the position of Ishwarapuri, being defeated by him, and he was happy to be defeated by him. Although it was just a technical, grammatical little detail. It was the submission unto Ishwarapuri. The Vedas declare that the Lord by nature always expands his devotees' glories by making them victorious. So after some months passed, Ishwarapuri continued on his travels to various places of pilgrimage. The next time Mahaprabhu and Ishwarapuri, their paths intersected, was in Gaya. This is described in Chaitanya Bhagavat, and since it is, it's not also in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Another lila took place. By this time, the father of Nimai Pandit had left this world, Jagannath Mishra. So on the occasion of his father's Shraddha, Nimai Pandit decided that he wanted to go to Gaya and offer in a formal way the Shraddha rituals for his father. Because he was a nice Brahmin boy and he was following all the rituals of the Brahminical community. He was not yet a devotee, he was still in that Smarta program. So something very several very wonderful and important sequential things happened. And the course of their traveling to Gaya, Nimai was traveling with a number of his students and he got a fever. Now, does the personality of Godhead ever get a fever? No. But even Krishna got a headache, right? And what did Krishna do? Do you know what Krishna did when he got a headache? Any of the kids know what Krishna did when he got a headache? What did Krishna do?
He asked
another one
to get the dust
of the lotus feet. Yeah. Krishna wanted dust from the devotee's lotus feet to cure his headache. And what did the devotees say? No, that's a big offense. Putting the dust from our feet on Krishna's head, you know what that will do? We'll go to hell for committing that offense. And then what happened? The gopi said, quick, quick, take the dust from our feet. Put it on Krishna's forehead, quick. And Narada said, aren't you worried about getting a reaction for putting the dust from your feet? And they said, don't worry about the reaction. We'll go to hell. If Krishna can get relief from his headache, that's everything to us. Take, go quickly. That's the surrender of the gopis to relieve Krishna of his headache. So a very, very similar lila. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu got a fever. It wasn't a headache. It was a fever. So the students of Mahaprabhu, they didn't know what to do. They got all the doctors, the best doctors they could find, and nothing worked. His fever was very, very intense. Finally, Mahaprabhu said, or Nimai Pandit said, there's one thing that will cure my fever. Take some water, wash the feet of brahmanas, and then if I drink the water from the foot wash of the brahmanas, it will cure my fever at once. And so that's what they did. They got water, washed the feet of some brahmanas, and brought, and immediately, at once, the fever of Mahaprabhu broke. Placing the mercy of the brahmanas upon his head, taking that humble, because before he was this debater, I mean, teachers, students, anybody coming and going. He was arguing and wrangling and debating. Now he's taking the position of submission unto the brahmanas. Very important in becoming a devotee. Then the next thing that happened was when he went to Gaya, as is tradition, there's a place, there's a nice picture of this also, there's an imprint of the foot of Lord Vishnu. And the brahmanas were gathered around the imprint of the foot of Lord Vishnu, and they were singing hymns and praises to Lord Vishnu and his surrender to his lotus feet. So Mahaprabhu, or then Nimai Pandit, attended that ceremony where he was taking the sounds of the brahmanas glorifying the lotus feet of Lord Vishnu. And that entered into his heart. And just at that moment, Ishwar Puri came. And Mahaprabhu immediately recognized him, and he immediately recognized Mahaprabhu. And he offered his respects at the feet of Ishwar Puri. Then the final thing that happened was there's a practice for those who go to Gaya. I've never been there, but it's described in Chaitanya Charitamrita and Chaitanya Bhagavat that there are a number of temples and a number of rituals that one may be able to do in the course of a day, and you're to fast for that day while you're doing all those rituals. So Nimai Pandit did that. He went through all the rituals and all the temples and was fasting. At the end of the day, he was preparing a meal to be offered to his Shalagram Shila. And as he was just getting ready to take his meal, Ishwara Puri came. And he was so happy. Ishwara Puri, how fortunate. I've just made an offering. Please you accept. And Ishwara Puri said, you've been fasting all day. You must be very hungry. You take. I'm fine. No, please, please. Sacrifice for his spiritual meal. I'll cook again. Please honor me in this very auspicious day. I've been honoring my father Shraddha. Please you accept the prasad offered to my deity. And Ishwara Puri accepted the prasad that was offered to his deity. He cooked again. And then he took prasad. So those are sequences, each of them very important in Lord Chaitanya's Leela, showing us how does one become situated in devotion to Krishna. Just like many of you, the younger devotees here, you're students. You're not Sanskrit grammar and logic students, but you're students. And you're becoming proficient in your studies. Now how, from Mahaprabhu's example, Nimai Pandit's example, how do you become a devotee? By the mercy of a devotee. You may, as says Gadadhar Pandit, his friend, he introduced him to Ishwara Puri. You get some association of sadhus with good fortune. And then you render some service to that sadhu, and you hear from the sadhu, and you render further service to that sadhu as they recommend. This is all things that happened. There's a particular storyline, but there are components in that process, and it's not just the children, the grown-up children, adults. Same principle. At whatever point one gets the good fortune of devotee association, that's when spiritual practices can begin. Sadhu Sangha, Adau Shraddha, Tata Sadhu Sangha, Tata Bhajana Kriya. You begin devotional practices, hearing and chanting, Shravanam, Kirtanam, and do that regularly. With Nimai Pandit, it was 1 to 2 hours every day, just hearing. He did other things, he did his brahminical duties. But he was hearing from Ishwara Puri every day, every day, every day, every day. And he had some service in the course of that hearing. And when his own pride or his own position as a proficient performer of his service was put to some test, he submitted to his spiritual master. Then these other steps that were also mentioned. Mahaprabhu, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes are very, very deep. For many reasons they're very, very deep. But he's the personality of Godhead showing by example how to be a devotee. But at the same time, he's the personality of Godhead. When Vrindavan Das Thakur is narrating this chapter, he calls Gaurasundar the husband of the goddess Saraswati. He was showing the capacity of scholarship, but he's not a devotee of Saraswati, he's the husband of the goddess Saraswati, the goddess of learning. And he exhibited learning capacity like the personality of Godhead. Just like in the pastime with it comes later, after he meets Ishwara Puri, but before his initiation, by Ishwara Puri. He met the great scholar Keshava Kashmiri. I'll describe this quickly because the time. But Keshava Kashmiri was a great devotee of Saraswati. He had been such an ardent worshipper of Saraswati that Saraswati appeared to him in a dream and told him, "You have pleased me so much by your service that I give you this benediction. You will be able to defeat anybody in a discussion about logic and arguments and philosophy in any field of scholarship. You have my blessings." He became very proud and started debating people, and he was always win. So he started traveling around, and he had thousands of followers because he was like this super guy, so smart and so learned. When he had some discussion with Nimai Pandit, Nimai Pandit was then just 16, and Keshava Kashmiri, a Brahmin from Kashmir, vastly learned, fabulously famous, he came to the school under a tree by the bank of the Ganga, where Nimai had hundreds and hundreds of students hearing from him. Nimai treated him with great respect and asked, "Keshava Kashmiri, I hear that you're such a scholar. Could you do us this wonderful favor? Could you compose some verses in glorification of Mother Ganges?" "Oh yes, I can compose Sanskrit verses in glorification of Mother Ganges. Just listen." Blowing like the wind, 100 verses spontaneously composed. Ever tried to write poetry? 100 verses spontaneously. It took him over an hour, nonstop. When he was done, he smiled, and Nimai said, "Oh, Keshava Kashmiri, such scholarship is not to be found anywhere in this world. But one thing, in the 56th verse that you spoke, could you describe the qualities and the faults of that verse?" Keshava Kashmiri said, "56th verse? I was just composing the Sanskrit spontaneously. I can't remember the 56th verse." Said, "Well, if you like, I can recite it back for you, and you can then tell me what are the qualities and the faults." He said, "How you can remember 56? I was speaking so fast, like the raging wind." And Mahaprabhu said, Nimai Pandit said, "Some persons are gifted by God to speak great poetry. Some persons are gifted by God to remember things very well. Each of us have some gift from God. So could you tell me what were the qualities and the faults in verse 56 of your..." "Well, I can't remember, but I'm sure there were only qualities and no faults. But if you find that there were some faults, why don't you say what those faults were?" He recited the verse back and said, "These are the qualities and these are the faults." And after indicating what the faults were, Keshava Kashmiri couldn't speak. Nothing would come out of his mouth, not a sound. And he was struck with wonder. And all the other students started laughing. "Ha ha ha ha, Keshava Kashmiri can't even speak." And Nimai Pandit said, "No, that's not nice. He's a very learned scholar. You should treat him with great respect. Who can speak like he has just done? Great personality. My dear Keshava, could you come back tomorrow? We could have more discussions together?" "Yes, yes, I'll come back tomorrow." The speech came back. So at night, before he took rest, he did his worship of Goddess Saraswati, offering prayers to her, "Please reveal why it was you've given me this promise. Because of my sincere, devoted worship of you, that I would never be defeated, but now I've been totally humiliated by a boy. please give me some sign to indicate what is your desire. That night he had a second dream where Goddess Saraswati appeared, and she chastised him severely. Said, "You're a puffed up fool. I've given you a benediction, and now you're going around boasting yourself here and there, when the very person who I derive my capacity from, you wanted me to give you the words to defeat him? He's the Supreme Personality of Godhead from whom I received my power to give to you. I can't contradict him. You've made a big offense. Tomorrow, first thing in the morning, you go to Nimai Pandit, place your head at his feet and surrender to him, and you become his student. Then you'll be relieved from this offense." Keshava Kashmiri then understood. He was thinking of Nimai to be an ordinary grammar school teacher. But now he's understood. He's the personality of Godhead appearing as a small Brahmin boy in Navadvipa. So he went the next day. Nimai greeted him very warmly. "I hope you slept well last night. And you're fresh and ready to share with us all your wisdom." And he fell at his feet right before all the other students with folded his palms and said, "Please accept me as your student. I have been totally proud and rendered foolish by my pride in my scholarship. Please accept me as your student." Nimai smiled, said, "Keshava, you're such a great scholar. Now you become humbled. Now you'll be able to understand the personality of Godhead. I suggest that you use your scholarship and write books to glorify Krishna." So Keshava Kashmiri wrote books to glorify Krishna. He became a great devotee. So he, who is the master of the goddess of learning, Saraswati, accepted defeat. He smashed Keshava Kashmiri, but he accepted defeat at the hands of a pure devotee because of his devotion. Not better scholarship, but pure devotion. Who can say scholarship? Scholarship this or that. But because of his pure devotion. So whether it's Vishnave Namaha, which is correct, or Vishnaya, which communicates the meaning although it's grammatically not correct, Krishna accepts the service, the wish to honor him and place oneself in obeisances before the Supreme Lord. That's how one becomes a devotee. And if we think about it, just one little conclusion here, there are so many things in our lives that we are the recipients of mercy. I was thinking about this during the this teenage thing. What's it called that we went to today? Bal Vihar. Every other week, Lal Gopal is now teaching a group of teenage kids ranging from 12 to 15. At least that's the batch that were with us today. And we're just covering like a little summary of the 12th chapter. We went back to the 10th chapter. And Krishna's giving... Arjuna asked Krishna, "Please give me ways that I can always remember you." 10th chapter, Bhagavad Gita. So he describes the vibhutis, the opulences of him. By seeing the opulences of Krishna, one can think of Krishna. Now most people, when they see opulences, they think, "Oh, I want to possess it. I want to put it in my pocket, make it mine, and become proud. Now look at all the things that I have here. I've got this one, I've got, look over this pocket, I've got that one and that one, and got another pocket over here too. I've got so much stuff. And become proud over things that belong to Krishna, opulences that belong to Krishna. Someone may have some beauty, someone may have some strength, someone may have some intelligence, someone maybe can dance, someone maybe can sing, someone can cook, someone can this, someone can that, and become proud. It's rather, it should be to remind us of Krishna, to always remember Krishna. Not to be the enjoyer of some opulence of Krishna, but to remember Krishna. So in our lives, back to practical day-to-day things, there are so many things in our lives that we have received from persons that love us. They're sacrificing left and right and sideways to help us. Our parents, our friends, our school teachers, our this and our that. Whether they're Krishna conscious or not, I mean, ultimately behind that sacrifice they're making is Krishna. We're receiving something from Krishna. And if we can see Krishna behind that and feel gratitude unto Krishna, as well as gratitude unto the persons who are providing us with something that we require. Ultimately, it's Krishna. And gratitude may start with something that's proximate, but as we mature, we can understand it's even behind that proximate is something ultimate. It's Krishna. Krishna is taking care of everything that we require. And without Krishna, we're finished. If Krishna turned the valve off, we're finished. At least materially. The soul isn't extinguished, but everything that we require. So, recognizing that which we've received in our lives with some gratitude unto Krishna. Just like Prabhupada would describe, drink water. If you didn't drink water, you'd die. You dehydrate and you die. Drink water. So just when you drink water, think of Krishna. Krishna's provided this. Krishna's the taste of water. You can be conscious of Krishna when you're just, you know, breathing air and receiving light. If there wasn't light, we'd be finished. If there wasn't sunlight, things wouldn't grow. We'd be finished. We just take it for granted because we're spoiled, selfish, ungrateful beings. We just want more. If the heart can become somehow simple and grateful, Prabhupada writes, right in Bhagavad, in Srimad Bhagavatam, one who has a simple and grateful heart can easily enter the kingdom of God. Even simple things. That's happening in our lives all the time. That's how we become a devotee. So this is Lord Chaitanya becoming a devotee. But because he was arguing with people that were nonsense arguers, he accepted the conclusion of Ishwara Puri because it wasn't born of speculation. It was born of pure devotion. However technical, he accepted for the right reason. And he was happy. That can be our position also. It's how we can become devotees or become better devotees. We're trying to become devotees. Become better devotees. Become happier devotees. We become happier devotees, we'll find there's more devotees. Because they'll be attracted by the happiness of the happy devotees. It works like that. And same, you know, you kids in school. You can attract people to Krishna just by being happy devotees. It's true. And you become happy devotees by being very grateful for all the wonderful, wonderful resources and gifts of so many nice things that Krishna is supplying in your lives. just like look around and take notice and feel grateful. And your devotion will be nurtured by that. Just like the chanting of the holy name. I was thinking this when Rami was singing that nice melody. Such a nice melody. Very simple melody, not at all complicated. I mean, your fingers were moving quite a bit, but you know, to chant along with the melody is not difficult. But so pleasing. And Radhahari shared with me, I was appreciating when Madhava sings that melody. He can sing that melody for hours, and nobody gets tired, including himself. It's not like, oh boy, same melody. It's so filled with devotion. And then he gets another chance to sing, and he sings the same melody for another few hours, and then another chance, and he's the same melody. I heard from Govinda, when he's in Europe, he sings the same melody. He doesn't get tired. It's just because he's feeling devotion. So I shared that with Badahari, and Badahari said, yeah, I taught him the melody. but then in Badahari's very humble way, he said, but he's actually my teacher because he took that melody and really became absorbed in it. So I taught him the melody, but he's teaching me bhakti. That's Badahari's humility. Feeling grateful. So Madhava's feeling grateful, you've taught me a nice melody. Badahari's feeling grateful, you're teaching me what bhakti is. By something that's very simple. But by taking something very simple with a grateful and humble heart, especially something that's Krishna, one can enter the spiritual world just from that. Receiving with a grateful heart. Something so wonderful. That's what brought Chaitanya Mahaprabhu from the wrangling scholar to the position of devotion. And Ishwarpuri accepted him as a disciple. Okay, any discussion? Comments? Yes?
One thing about religion, again and again, gradual pardoning or stuff. Recently we were reading chapter 3 and then Yajna comes and Krishna says that Yajna was created and he should offer sacrifice to any god. And then, but then Prabhupada's Purport says, you know, once we chant Sankirtan Yajna, brought by Lord Chaitanya, everything is taken care of. How to keep demigods in proper perspective to show our gratitude. Like, when I was there in school, like, from the beginning I used to pray Mother Saraswati even in the school when we go, we pray. Then later on.
Whenever you had exams, right? Before and after the exam.
That was true, but I was there.
I was told that by many students. When I was young, I would regularly go to the temple before and after exams.
That's true. So now, how to keep demigods in proper perspective to show our gratitude?
It's very simple. Sarvadharmam prityaja mam ekam sharanam vraja. And by accomplishing that mam ekam sharanam, all other things are accomplished. Very simple. By that worship of Krishna, by the surrender to Krishna, Goddess Saraswati is pleased, etc. All the leaves and twigs and branches of the tree are receiving nourishment by pouring water on the root of the tree. Krishna is the root of all existence. And by that mam ekam sharanam, it's already accomplished. So that's the proper place. It's already accomplished. You're not disrespecting or ignoring. You're giving with proper knowledge. Otherwise, it's avidhi purvakam. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and by taking up directly, under the order of Scripture, taking up directly His worship, all the other parts and parcels of Krishna are being satisfied, and any obligation to them is being fulfilled.
Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was doing, that is also not required once we put it under to Krishna.
The Shraddha?
Yeah.
There's Vaishnava Tantra for Shraddha. But the answer is yes to your question. It's no longer required. The rituals of Karmakanda are necessary for those who are not Vaishnavas. Those who are Vaishnavas, they're automatically achieving or fulfilling the purposes of those Karmakanda rituals and more in one stroke. In one lecture in New York, Prabhupada made some nice sound effects. He said, there are two methods. The goldsmith method and the blacksmith method. The goldsmith method is when he has a little hammer and he makes a little tap, 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 and right into the microphone. Tap, 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 tap. Tap, 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 tap. And the blacksmith method is you put the metal in the fire, make it hot, put it on the anvil, take the hammer, thud! One stroke, everything finished. Ours is the blacksmith method. It's all accomplished. Within Hari Bhakti Vilas, there are procedures for Vaishnavas on the occasion of a deceased relative what to do. Basically, it's offering Vishnu prasad, offering foodstuffs to Vishnu, and offering the prasad to the soul of the departed relative or family member, which is essentially what happens in Gaya, but there's so many prior rituals to that particular event. So, the way that Prabhupada has made it very simple institutionally is one can sponsor the Sunday feast, which means food is offered to Vishnu, the bhoga is offered to Krishna, and then the brahmanas and the Vaishnavas are fed prasad in the name of the departed relative. And it's not just, you know, a fundraising, you know, gimmick or scheme. It's accomplishes if it's done with sincerity and, you know, proper presence. If the pujaris are pure and the person making the sponsorship is with, you know, in a purposeful manner. It's in the name of, for the honor of my, and it's done. It's accomplished. With a picture or without a picture. Because the purpose is accomplished. by the sankalpa, the intent. Someone else? Yes.
You said sarada, and you also spoke about bhakti. Can you tell, explain a little bit more about how bhakti and sarada go together? Are they different? How does it?
I'm glad you phrased it the way that you phrased it. Saying, you know, instead of saying what's the difference between the two, because there's not a difference. How they're related. In Padma Purana, there's a verse that describes the angas of surrender. And there's six. And surrender is like the verse of Bhagavad Gita 4:34, pranipat. Tadviti pranipatena pariprashnena sevaya. So what is that submission or surrender? It's those six things. So those six things, the limbs of surrender, their humility, considering that the Supreme Lord is one's maintainer, considering the Supreme Lord as one's protector, accepting things favorable for devotional service, rejecting things unfavorable for devotional service, full self-surrender, atma-nivedana, those are the six limbs. So it's accepting things favorable for devotional service is part of devotional service. Rejecting things unfavorable for devotional service is part of devotional service. But it's the mood of submission that, if that mood of submission is gone, one is not going to be very consistent with accepting and rejecting favorable and unfavorable circumstances. So the essence is the submission. Pranipat. That's part of bhakti. It's the force, the propellant, the fuel, rocket fuel that propels bhakti. But bhakti is also, there's an attraction towards what? You know, the object attracts. The name Krishna means he attracts. And there's something propelling that. I want to surrender. So surrender is the act of submission unto the object Krishna. And bhakti specifically, it's not just the sentiment, but it's the practical activity that one does in that mood of surrender and submission to the object Krishna. The practical activity in the mood of submission and surrender, that's bhakti. So one component of that is surrender and submission. But then there's the practical activity as well. Something else?
Yeah,
yes.
I have a question on the same verse.
Okay.
In that one, Krishna mentioned that one should surrender to a learned scholar and ask them questions and clear all their get the knowledge. But in the same Krishna, he mentioned in Bhagavatam, like when he was talking to Nanda Maharaj about starting the sacrifices given to Indra,
uh-huh.
He was mentioning in Srila Prabhupada's Krishna book, he mentioned that if one should surrender to Krishna, they don't have to surrender to anyone else. So,
do you see a contradiction in those two things? I don't.
Surrendering to Krishna and surrendering to a learned scholar.
Oh. It doesn't exactly say learned scholar, does it? It says a tattvadarshi. A jnani might not be a tattvadarshi. Do you know any learned scholars that aren't tattvadarshis? I do. Universities are filled with learned scholars that are not tattvadarshis. So what's a tattvadarshi that's different than a learned scholar? How does one become a tattvadarshi? One who has gone through that process, tadvidhi pranipatena pariprashnena sevaya. They became a tattvadarshi because they went through that. Now they're a tattvadarshi and they're able to pass on the same to the next one by disciplic succession. They receive something and now they can give that something. They receive the mercy of an elevated Vaishnav, devotee of the Lord. Now they can give that something to the next person. That's how they became a tattvadarshi, not just a learned scholar. So now, back to your question. We'll just edit out learned scholar and say tattvadarshi, or one who has received knowledge in disciplic succession. No, Krishna says to his father, Nanda Maharaj, once you surrender unto Krishna, you don't need to surrender unto the Anya Devatas, the miscellaneous many demigods. But surrendering if you want to surrender to Krishna, how do you surrender to Krishna? By just surrendering to one who is dear to Krishna. That's what that verse is saying. Tadvidhi pariprateena, pariprashneena sevaya. You need to surrender to a tattvadarshi to know Krishna, to become a tattvadarshi. So they're not at all contradictory. They're the same. They're not even like a means to an end, but they're the same. Let me ask you, answer your question by asking you a question. The options are A and B. So, when that wonderful day comes that you're at Krishna's lotus feet, A, it's just you and Krishna's lotus feet. Or B, is you, Krishna's lotus feet, and unlimited numbers of living entities that are also surrendering unto Krishna's lotus feet. B. So there's your answer to your question. You want to be at Krishna's lotus feet, you better be surrendered to those who are very dear to Krishna at Krishna's lotus feet. Or you're not going to be at Krishna's lotus feet. You're going to be at some imagined place, but not at Krishna's lotus feet. So Krishna builds into the system how to reach his lotus feet by surrendering unto him. They're not exclusive. They're the same. Okay? It's what Prabhupada calls the mystery of disciplic succession. If we didn't require disciplic succession, we would just surrender to Krishna. But who needs the disciplic succession anyways? Krishna says we need it. Krishna says to Arjuna, not in Bhagavad Gita but in Adi Purana, one who says he's my devotee, he's not my devotee. But one who is the devotee of my devotee, that's my devotee. Very clear, huh? Same as this other example, A and B. It's B. They're not different. Surrendering unto Krishna's dear representatives is surrendering unto Krishna.
So it's not the same as like surrendering to demigods?
No. Because with respect to the, like this earlier question, respect to the demigods is required. As we should respect every living entity. But our surrender is to Krishna. And by surrender to Krishna, it's a pure devotee. The demigods are not exactly in that position. They're in mixed devotion. Nor are they passing necessarily the message of Shuddha Bhakti. But one who is passing the message of Shuddha Bhakti, surrender there. And you get Krishna. And it's not like, you know, there's no delay. Wait around for a while and maybe Krishna will show up. It's immediate. It's Krishna's system. One becomes dear to Krishna by that submission to those who are dear to Krishna. Supposing I said, you know, Prabhupada presents it this way. Love me, love my dog. He said, I go for walks in the park, and there's a big man. You know, you try to see the big man in his office, and you can't see the big man in his office, but you see him in a park, and he's walking his dog. And you go and, you know, scratch the chin of the dog, and oh, this is a nice dog. Immediately you made friendship with the man. Or if I said, you know, I like you very much. I don't know about your children, your daughter, and your son, you know. I don't feel so comfortable being around them, but I like being with you. How are you going to feel about that? You love me, you love my children. And conversely, someone befriends your child. Immediately, they're your friend. Immediately. Yes.
Is this a follow-up question I asked in the morning? It's about the demigods praising Shiva as Supreme Brahman. Being great Vaishnavas, why would they glorify Shiva as Supreme Brahman?
Didn't we do this morning? The same answer as this morning. You want to hear it again? Okay.
I want to hear.
It's been recorded. You can hear it again. I'll say it again. This with the question was in reference to the churning of the milk ocean, the devas on one side and the asuras on the other side, and one of the first things produced was the ocean of poison. So the demigods and Lord Vishnu went to Lord Shiva and said, "Help." So why would they praise? That's the question. And the answer, I gave a long answer. Then why are you asking it again?
No, I was thinking it was answering why they would go to Shiva.
They're following Lord Vishnu. Lord Vishnu wants to honor Lord Shiva. Why did Krishna, same answer, why did Krishna go to Arjuna? Arjuna, battlefield, there's the battlefield, go fight. Is it because he's hiding behind Arjuna because he's a good warrior and he wants a certain outcome? And he can't do it, so he has to get Arjuna to do it? He's got his hitman and get, you know, go out and hit those people? No, he wants to honor. And with the next example, which was the next example? Bhishma Dev. Krishna could not pacify Yudhisthira. Bhishma Dev pacified Yudhisthira. What's going on? Who's the personality of Godhead anyway? Is it a Bhishma or a Krishna? It's Krishna. But Krishna wanted to glorify Bhishma. So he had him pacify Yudhisthira when he couldn't do it. He wanted to glorify Bhishma Dev. Etc. And other examples. The Lord likes to glorify His devotee. He puts His devotees in situations that the devotees get glorified and Krishna likes it. Why not? Okay? Why are you asking the question again?
It's like they know that Krishna is a supreme Brahman, but why do
they want? It says he's a supreme Brahman. Then why question his motivations? He could do what he likes. He likes to glorify his devotees. It's nice. It's a nice quality. I remember we were on a morning walk with Srila Prabhupada once in Mayapur, and it was very memorable. event, he was in a mood of glorifying Bhakti Vinod Thakur. And it was like Prabhupada had 10 mouths and he was just glorifying Bhakti Vinod Thakur in so many ways, in so many ways, in so many ways. Such a visionary, so powerful, so capable, published so many books, did so many different types of preaching, wrote books in Sanskrit and spoke to illiterate people and started Namahata and, you know, sent books around the world to glorify Bhagavad Chaitanya and had a vision of a wonderful Adbhuta Mandir and, like, you know, just prolific. He wrote over 100 books. Devotional books. And he started when he was 36. And he had 10 children and he was the chief magistrate. He's like, you know, it's a super devotee. So somebody asked Srila Prabhupada, if he understood all of this happening, why did Prabhupada, why didn't Bhaktivinoda Thakur start preaching Krishna consciousness all over the world? Prabhupada smiled and he said, left something for us to do. And in turn, Prabhupada left something for us to do. He described this temple that he wanted built. And it's taken 38 years for us to get around to start breaking the ground and building it. You know, there have been lots of obstacles, but there's also been lots of distractions. That's happening. That's wonderful. Prabhupada could have done it himself. Gave something for us to do. Pure devotee likes his devotees to do something, and Krishna likes his pure devotees to do something. He gives them. Why not? Anything else? Okay. Go ahead. No, you had your other question, and I said yes.
Okay. I was just trying to follow up. And we went to Festival of Inspiration in New Vrindavan.
Yeah.
And there we attended this Vastu session. And the question was, I raised a question, if we are surrendered to Krishna, why should we, you know, do all these Vastu and other things? And then he says, because you are not fully purified, because you are trying to surrender, but you are not yet there, so you still get the karmic reactions. So therefore, you should...
Everything is fine up until the get karmic reaction part.
Pardon?
Everything is fine, except the get karmic reaction part. Devotees do not get karmic reaction from chanting Hare Krishna, from reading Bhagavad Gita, from doing your occupational duty, provided you're doing them for Krishna. There's a different set of rules that are operating in the lives of devotees than getting karmic reaction. I'm sorry. I just got through, somebody was saying this, and another person brought it to my attention. I gave them a list that long of just like in 5 minutes of scriptural references saying, you know, even just by chanting Hare Krishna once. Just take 6 canto, chapter 2 and 3, or so many other things. It's not so. Our consciousness may not be fully purified, that's one thing, but to say we're getting karmic reaction is another thing. Because our consciousness is not fully purified, we may be prone to be influenced by material forces. But we're protected. We're under the care of the internal potency. To think otherwise is, it's a mistake. Now the Vastu question came up this morning also. You were there?
Yeah, I was just trying to follow. I remembered from that incident. This one is question.
Well, the person that I was referring to is the temple president of Houston is Shyamasundar. And he told me about family after family after family that weren't devotees, but just congregation people that kind of, you know, moved around. And they had calamity after the different owners of that house. And, you know, one of them finally went to a Vastu expert, but because he knew that several families in a row had problems, and he said it has to do with Vastu. So there is a science that says negative influences can be read in this way and positive influences can be read in that way. But there is also the verse in Bhagavad Gita, Shubha Ashubha Palaya Eva Mokshase Karma Bandhanai. Mokshase Karma Bandhanai. Regardless of Shubha and Ashubha. For the principle that this is transcendental knowledge. Chapter 4, Bhagavad Gita. There's a platform where it's not dependent upon Vastu or your chart or, you know, what's the weather forecast. So it may rain if the weather forecast says rain. It also might not, but it might rain. And then, you know, but that doesn't change my course of bhakti. And if I carry umbrella, I'll stay dry. If I don't carry umbrella, I'll get wet. It doesn't change my course of bhakti. Anything else? Hare Krishna. I knew you'd have a question, that's why I looked over there. Okay, no, I didn't think it was going to be Vastu either. You generally say, actually, I have two questions. That's good. I'm not embarrassing. It's compliment.
Maharaj, regarding Prabhu's first question, like about going Gaya, I have heard like saying in Gaya, usually they say that at least once in our lifetime we have to go and do Shraddha over there because forefathers would come live and get our Shraddha directly from us. Like,
Okay. Now, if one is not a Vaishnava, I don't know about this reference. But let's just assume it's like coming from a bona fide source. Assuming it's coming from a bona fide source, does it apply to a Vaishnava? Or does it apply to those who are not Vaishnava? Correct. So one has to observe things. It's one of the rules of spiritual life is that one should be under the guidance of a qualified spiritual master. And there's a reason why. Because some things may apply to this person that don't apply to that person. And it very much has to do with faith. And the qualified person has to see the faith of the individual. And according to the faith of the individual, there's a prescription. And the faith of another individual, it's a different prescription. Same circumstance, different individual with a different faith, a different prescription. It's according to faith. So one who has faith in the personality of Godhead, sarva-dharmam parityajya mam ekam sharanam. And if one doesn't have faith in that, then they need to so many other kinds. But it doesn't make the so many other kinds wrong. It's just not yet complete. And vice versa. When it's complete, Aham tam sarva papebhyo moksha yashami ma suchaha. Ma suchaha. Do not doubt. Have no fear. Alright? I'll give an example. This may come up. I'm giving an example because it may come up in your life sometime, either personally or with somebody that you're relating to. In our temple in New York, there's a Bengali woman whose husband died, and she wanted to sponsor the Sunday feast in honor of her husband, and she wanted to know if she should go to the temple when the feast was being sponsored in honor of her husband. So I consulted with some knowledgeable Vaishnavas, and according to our Vaishnav way, one may follow the rule that says you don't go before the deity for a certain number of days, depending upon what caste and so on and so on. Or Om apavitro pavitro va. Pavitra apavitra. Sarvavastam gatopiva. Yasmaret pundarikaksham. You've heard that mantra before, right? Sabhaya abhyantara suchihi. Shri Vishnu, Shri Vishnu, Shri Vishnu. So, depending upon the faith, the answer may be this or the answer may be that. One who has faith in Vishnu, pavitra apavitrova. Now there are certain standards that our founder Acharya has given that says worshipping the deity is one thing, coming into the temple room is another thing. Okay? But that's an example. According to faith of the individual, something may be prescribed. So that it's like if one can't surrender into Krishna, like we did in 12th chapter today at the youth group. Just fix your mind on Krishna and engage your intelligence always in Krishna, and you'll be with Krishna without a doubt, always. Can't do that, do this, can't do that, do this, can't do that, do that, can't do that, do that. So this is, this, you know, you must once in your lifetime is one of those down here. Because if your life is fully devoted unto the personality and Godhead, that's accomplished. Next.
In this explanation, I want to clarify that so there is a certain period of times, like as you say, like we should not go into the temple and everything. It's not, I'm just asking, like even if we are like fully surrendered to Krishna, that we should not have to worry about like
that's right.
Within 1 week or 10 days or anything.
That's right.
So for others, like there is some period of time that they should not go into the temple.
Yes, that's right. So it's called a smarta regulation and it's a Vaishnav regulation. Like the example that I gave this morning was Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya taking prasad. Now, for a brahmana, that's a no-no. That's breaking the rules. You don't break the rules if you're a smart brahman. And he knew what the rules were, and he broke the rules. And on what basis? There was a higher rule. And because of faith in that higher rule, he followed the higher rule. He neglected the lesser rule. Both are scriptural references based upon faith in the Supreme Personality Godhead. He followed that rule. And Lord Chaitanya approved. He was testing him, actually, to see has his faith moved or has it stayed the same? Because he was knowledgeable in both.
Thinking of like the parents of the incarnations, like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's parents and Lord Rama's parents and Lord Krishna's parents.
Yes.
It looks like the everybody's like suffering and separations. Father dies early. Like
something.
Almost, it happens with all the incarnations. So, it's like, is there
anything? Not all. Not at all. Parama Kashyapya Anaditi. I mean, we can go through it. They didn't at all. But, you know, if there is some situation like that, what does it mean? There's something transcendental. Some separation. Viraha bhav. So to us it looks like, and to them it's, you know, it's an ecstatic mood of love and separation. It's an enrichment, an enhancement of love. That's what it is. And there's a lila involved in it.
Separation is like
transcendental.
No, the parents.
Whoever it is, if there's a transcendental attachment, it's ecstatic. Whether it's meeting or separation.
Looks like the mother's.
It looks like, but it's not. To us, it looks like. So we should look at it through the lens of our conditioning. We should look at it through the lens of Scripture. Shastra Chakshusha. Jnana Chakshusha. Look through that lens. Okay. Anything from the kids? Okay. Let's have kirtan. Your turn.